On the matter of Township of Manalapan versus Anthony Gentile, can we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning. My name is William Wolf. I'm attorney of law firm Bassett, William Wolf. Our law firm represents the plaintiff petitioner, the Township of Manalapan.
Good morning, Your Honors. Lawrence D. Sachs, on behalf of the defendant slash respondent, Anthony Gentile, and the state of Eugene Gentile.
Good afternoon and welcome, counsel. Mr. Wolf.
Before I begin, I'd like to reserve part of my time for rebuttal.
That's fine.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to make this presentation on behalf of the Township of Manalapan. As this court stated, the issue today is narrow. It's limited to the issue of whether the appellate division erred in concluding that a plenary hearing regarding the reasonable probability of a zoning change was not required before the commencement of trial. As this court has stated in East Allendale and Kaoli, a 104 hearing is necessary. If a party to a condemnation proceeding, usually the defendant, wants to contend that the highest and best use of the subject premises is something other than what is legally permissible. And what legally permissible means is what the zoning is as set by, or the uses are as set by the zoning in place at the time of the taking. To go beyond what's legally permissible, it is necessary under the holdings of this court that a 104 hearing be conducted so that a judge outside of the hearing of the jury can evaluate the testimony and make a decision as to whether it is reasonably probable that the highest and best use on the date of taking can be something other than what is legally permissible. In order to move beyond the concept of legal permissibility, the property owner has to establish that the change in zoning is reasonably probable. In this case, there was no dispute as to what was the legally permissible use of subject premises. The appraiser for the town and the appraiser for the property owner came to the same decisions as to what was legally permissible. In each of their appraisals, they appraised the property based on the zoning in place at the time, which permitted 3-acre parcels of property. And they were both consistent with the basis of their appraisals, which was that zoning applied as the highest and best use, and as a consequence, the maximum developable property was approximately 12 single-family lots. The defendant, and I should indicate, there was only a $50,000 difference between the two appraisers. The defendants, obviously, based on the strategy they used in this trial, wanted more money than an additional $50,000. So what the property owner did was, number one, not present any testimony from their appraisal. And that was key to their plan because their appraiser, as I previously indicated, had the same basis for valuation as the township's appraiser. The property owner then convinced the trial judge to permit them to present testimony from a planner. That planner had been originally retained by the property owner in relation to litigation, which started in 2002, when the property was rezoned in a general rezoning of the township that was undertaken at that time. In 2002, the property owner retained an attorney, retained an appraiser, and started a lawsuit which had two components. One was a prerogative writ claim, and the other was a claim for inverse condemnation. All of those claims were dismissed eventually over the course of a number of years by the trial court. When the trial court dismissed the inverse condemnation claim, the trial court provided that it was without prejudice. So when this condemnation action began, the property owner also had a claim for inverse condemnation. That claim was again dismissed by the trial court, which was affirmed by the appellate division, leaving only the claims related to the condemnation. The property owner convinced the trial judge to permit them to present the testimony of a planner. That planner was the planner retained for the initial case, and that planner did not produce a new report for the purposes of this litigation. As a result of the in limine motions that the township filed, the trial judge permitted Mr. Phillips, who was the planner, to testify within the confines of the following. This is a quote from the trial judge. "The tract is ideally situated for development at an equal or greater intensity to that allowed by the previously existing R40/20 and LBT zoning." And the judge cautioned the defendant's attorney numerous times in response to numerous objections made by the township that right to talk on the, address the jury under that limited basis was being exceeded by the defendant's attorney. As a consequence, the defendant's planner provided testimony that the property in question would be an ideal place for the same types of uses that were surrounded that property. In fact, the attorney for the defendants called the subject premises the hole in the donut, because the property surrounding this property was half-acre zoning. That half-acre zoning had been in existence for years, well before 2002. Planner presented by the developer, here the property owner, agreed and acknowledged during cross-examination that a variance was necessary in order to change the use of the subject premises. But contrary to the law of this court, the planner did not provide any testimony as to the reasonable probability that the zoning would be changed either pursuant to a variance or an amendment to the zoning ordinance. I think it's of significance that, for instance, in Caoli, the dispute in that case was a C2 variance. The issue in this case is a use variance. The variance that is the most difficult to obtain, requires the most testimony and opinions, and in Caoli, this court made it very clear that in order to provide testimony to support a finding by the judge that a change in use would be reasonably probable, the testimony had to support and address what are called the negative criteria in the municipal land use law, which is that there could be no adverse effect on the zoning itself or the master plan. That testimony was never presented.
And that calls for expert testimony, Counsel?
Yes, absolutely.
Was there any objection to Phillips's testimony?
Yes. I could have had a sign that said objection. I objected so many times. Now, as a trial attorney, you have to start to think, how many times can I object in front of a jury to have the jury wonder, what does this attorney not want me to hear? The objections were numerous. There was a lot of argument on the in limine motion. So there was no doubt what the position of the town was.
Please go ahead.
That a 104 hearing was necessary.
And when was the request for a 104 hearing made?
During in limine motions.
It was during the eve of trial.
At what point
trial,
in the trial was it made?
Excuse me?
At what point in the proceedings?
During in limine motions and throughout the trial. In fact, that was the argument made when I made a motion for a directed verdict.
Even putting the 104 hearing aside, it's your position that the planner, Mr. Phillips, did not give any foundational testimony to support his conclusion that it was ideally suited. He'd have to give testimony about the reasonable probability of a variance, and there was no such testimony.
Correct.
So, I mean, regardless of a 104 hearing, if the planner is considered an expert, his opinion would be a net opinion.
Correct.
And that was argued, I think, in your when this colloquy happened before the court. Was it not, Mr. Wolf, January 11th, page 117?
It was. There was no doubt what the position of the town was.
Mm-hmm.
That, and in fact, there is a letter in the appendix from the township attorney. Actually, it was the notice of appeal from the report, which is PA 41. The notice of appeal from report of commissioners and notice of motion to frame issues and fix trial date. He states that Township further demands trial by jury as to the issues of evaluation subsequent to a determination of all legal issues herein. The town asked for that. The burden of proof at a 104 hearing is on the property owner. The property owner is the entity that should push this issue forward, and yet the property owner didn't. The property owner.
So there was no testimony, and was the issue of the likelihood of getting a variance even covered in Mr. Phillips' report?
No.
Did he cover at all the valuation of the half-acre lots that he was recommending for this property?
No, and that's what creates a very significant issue, because here...
Isn't there a further step? Even if it had been testimony, the court's required to have a 104 hearing to determine whether it's even going to allow the jury to hear that testimony. There was a reasonable probability that there will be a change.
Correct.
Even if it had not been in that opinion, there's still a step missing, according to your argument.
Correct, because this court in Caoli and in East Annandale wanted to remove speculation from the jury. Here, the perfect storm of speculation was created. The property owner did not produce their appraiser. The property owner produced a planner who did not provide the requisite professional opinions, and in fact acknowledge on cross-examination that a variance was needed.
You said they didn't produce the appraiser, but you earlier mentioned the appraisers.
So I did.
Is the appraiser's report part of this record?
It is. Okay. Both reports are.
So if we are pivoting off of the trial, why is the property owner's appraiser, who was never called to testify. Why is that even relevant here?
Well, it's relevant because Justice, the jury has to have a basis for their conclusion. Here, there was no one to link, for instance, the planner's testimony, although it was infirm. There was no one to link the planner's testimony to the valuation of the property.
Are we talking about Stewart?
Mr. Phillips, right?
Phillips. The planner.
No, so I see that you have that argument, you know, whether the appraiser is mentioned or not. All you have is a planner. And your argument is they have a planner, and he's speculating that this is ideally suited for 1.5-acre lots, and yet he doesn't give any foundational testimony,
correct,
which is your position.
Correct.
Tell us what the appropriate remedy is.
The appropriate remedy is a vacation of the judgment, a remand to the trial court for a new trial, with a direction to the trial court that it conduct a 104 pretrial hearing. That's the relief that's sought. This was as I said, a perfect storm for jury speculation. No contrary appraiser other than the township's appraiser. No planning testimony as to the criteria required in East Annandale. No appraisal testimony of the value linkage between a change in zoning, and just left it to the jury.
But didn't your own appraisal indicate that there was a difference? Conceded that there would be greater value on lots serviced by sanitary sewer and municipal water, as opposed to the adjacent lots that were well water and had no connection to the township.
On cross-examination, yes, the township's planner truthfully answered those questions, and he also truthfully indicated why he didn't build them more further into his appraisal. Now, appraisal is a very complex situation. None of us in this room could walk down a street and say that house is worth $500,000. And then the justice over here saying, no, it's worth $250,000.
Well, we might try.
But
we wouldn't have any basis for it.
Wouldn't know. There's no basis for it.
So you would concede that the jury wasn't required to accept your appraiser. Could have actually enlarged the amount, but your position is we don't know on what basis the jury came to the amount because of your argument that testimony that should not have been placed before the jury was before the jury.
That's correct. And what the appellate division did was to turn Paoli and East Annandale upside down. The appellate division states as follows. Phillips, who's the planner, did not present testimony regarding the likelihood of a variance being granted onto the subject premise. Something absolutely required by this court. He merely confirmed, while his opinion was that the subject property is best suited for 1/2-acre lots, a variance or other zoning change would be required, which he admitted on cross-examination, would be required before such lots would be permitted on the subject property. Thus, Phillips' testimony did not make any speculative comments regarding the likelihood of defendants obtaining a variance. That's exactly what Paoli and East Annandale said can't happen, and that's why there's a requirement for a 104 hearing.
I think we understand your position. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, except that I would like a few minutes at the end.
We'll have you back.
Thank you.
Mr. Stanton.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I think the issue here is quite limited, and that is whether or not a Rule 104 hearing really was necessary in this matter. I will respectfully suggest that it was not, and that in essence what happened during the trial out of the presence of the jury is that a Rule 104 hearing did occur. And let me just comment on why I take that position. But before I do that, there was a question from one of the justices regarding whether or not the appraisal by the defendants, or not the appraiser by the defendants' report ever came in, whether any comment was made upon it, whether the differential between the $50,000 as alleged by Mr. Wolf ever came into consideration. The answer is no. There was no production of the defendant's appraiser, and the jury was not privy to that report or to any testimony to that effect. But let me go back to the issue of the Rule 104 hearing. And I think, Justice Lavecchia, I think you pointed out that there was some discussion on this during the trial. And it happened on January 11th of 2017. And out of the presence of the jury, and I recall that that discussion probably lingered for well over an hour. And at that particular time, Judge Goomer did put strict parameters on the extent of testimony that could be provided by Mr. Phillips. And the parameters that were imposed is that he could testify as to the surrounding area, which was in his report. He could testify as to the potential highest and best use, but he was not permitted to touch on anything dealing with the existing zoning, the attempts by the municipality to downzone the property back in 2002, and the likelihood of obtaining any variance. And my review of Mr. Phillips' testimony, and as well the review by the Appellate Division, is he did not deviate from that. He stayed to whatever script he was bound to provide by virtue of what Judge Goomer had ruled on January 11th of 2017 on pages 54 through 97. So that did occur. Secondly, the contention that the decision by the Appellate Division somehow subverts what the Supreme Court decision was in Cayoli and in East Allendale, I believe was covered by the Appellate Division. First of all, in East Allendale, as this court noted, a Rule 104 hearing is not required in every condemnation hearing. In fact, the quote in Allendale is, that said, we do not suggest that every condemnation action involving a future zoning change will require the court to conduct a Rule 104 plenary hearing prior to trial. Well, that brings me to my other point. And Mr. Wolf has not mentioned this, but it's part of this particular tortured litigation on this file. The downzoning occurred in 2002. Mr. Phillips' report was prepared shortly after that. The township planner's report was prepared shortly after that. Those are the reports that were relied upon by both planners. That was a report that was relied upon by Ms. Beam, who basically adopted the report of Mr. Chadwick, which had been done 10 years earlier, and as well the report of Mr. Phillips. As well, prior to the trial, there had been a pretrial order issued by the court, by Judge Goomer, requiring a date certain by which a Rule 104 hearing had to be requested by either party. Now, certainly the Rule 104 hearing would have benefited my client, and that's the normal scenario. Certainly, if I had had the opportunity to inquire of Mr. Phillips of the likelihood of a zone change or the likelihood of obtaining a variance, that would have benefited our parties, my client. But that really wasn't necessary, and why was that not necessary? Because again, we can't get into the minds of what the jurors were thinking here. But having participated in this trial, I can only think that they discarded the testimony completely of the township, and that being their two witnesses, the appraiser and their planner, specifically with respect to Mr. Stewart, who was their appraiser. Mr. Stewart made several startling admissions during his on his cross-examination. He stated that more lots possibly could be built on this property than referenced in his report. He made that admission several times. He admitted that this particular lot, the subject lot owned by the Gentiles, which was 49 acres of farmland right in the middle of the township of Manalapan, had available sewer and water. And that would change his opinion, which would obviously yield in a greater density on this site. Interestingly, the so-called donut hole that Mr. Wolf referred to, that Mr. Phillips mentioned, is surrounded completely by much smaller lots, half-acre lots. But Mr. Stewart conceded this point during his cross-examination.
Counsel, can we go back to the issue on which the limited certification was made? Was there any, what were the proofs that were submitted at any point about the reasonable probability a zoning change would be granted?
Well, there were no proofs, and it wasn't necessary because that was not a position that Mr. Phillips was taking.
So the jury got to hear from Mr. Phillips.
Correct.
That this property would be ideally suited for a development that the zoning laws did not permit.
Justice Rabbit, no. I think what Mr. Phillips testified to is that he testified as to the surrounding area. He was barred from testifying as to whether or not there was any likelihood of any variance or any zoning change.
Let's look at what he said.
Yep.
Because part of it was interpretive, but part of it is his actual language. I believe it's ideally suited for a development that ... would be up to six times the density of the underlying RE 3-acre zone.
Right.
Those were his words.
Correct.
Was there any proof at all about the reasonable probability that the zoning change that would permit such a development would ever come to pass?
No, what he provided is he provided, as part of his proofs, he provided two maps. He provided a map of the general area showing the so-called donut hole, that obviously is part of the record, surrounded by much smaller lots. And also then a map of the general boundaries of Manalapan Township showing the various zoning restrictions that are implied.
If there's
doesn't
a one-off, sorry, Chief, go ahead.
Doesn't East Allendale require more than that? Doesn't it require some basis before the jury gets to hear this testimony about the reasonable probability for the zoning change that's being proffered?
Well, Your Honor, in a normal scenario, if I was requesting that there be testimony as to the likelihood of a variance or the likelihood of a zoning change, then when the 104 hearing could have been requested.
So
I didn't request that.
How is the jury to make an assessment in a situation like this? It sounds like the suggestion is if you leave off that phrase, mm-hmm. then there's not a problem.
Right.
Can the jury do anything other than speculate about
this? No, they don't have to speculate, and in fact, they didn't speculate in this
case. Why would that turn on you objecting and asking for 104 hearing? It's your expert. Why would that turn on you wanting a 104 hearing as opposed to your adversary?
Well,
it's your expert. You want him to testify. Why would you seek a hearing where he might be barred?
Justice, it would have benefited my client, obviously, to know if, and this would have required, obviously, a density variance. It would have required
the testimony benefited your client as it stood, because it was more. So why would you seek a hearing where that testimony might be barred? Wouldn't it be your adversary who would request a hearing, not you?
Well, I think
if that's the case, you could avoid any hearing on anything that was favorable
right.
to you.
I think my adversary had that benefit of the ruling by Judge Goomer on January 11th.
That makes no sense. You got the best of all worlds. You got your witness to be able to testify to a density that the law didn't permit without explaining to the jury what was necessary in order to convince the court that would even be possible.
Justice Lebeckia, I believe the issue really on Mr. Phillips' testimony, and again, did he comment on what the highest and best use is? Of course, he can do that in a condemnation hearing. And certainly, I think what happened here, and to answer your question, Justice Ratner, how would the jury decide what's the applicable density that would be here or the applicable zoning? Well, they took a site visit. They went out to the farm at the conclusion.
That's beyond their authority.
How does that help them determine the basis for a zoning change? They're not, do they bring expertise in that to the fore?
No, they don't bring any expertise, but to go back to the issue of zoning change, if you look at Mr. Phillips's testimony in total, he did not comment on the likelihood of there being a zoning change.
And
nor
should he.
Strategically, he wouldn't want to, because the assumption as presented by Mr. Phillips is, this is okay. This is acceptable. There's no suggestion whatsoever that there would be a legal barrier to it, and he's talking about density that would require a variance. That are you contending that this actually met with the East Allendale requirements?
Your Honor, I think it does, and I think what the appellate division, and again, we're talking about a review now of the appellate division opinion, And I'll quote on page 18. It's on page 18. Here the trial court properly exercised its discretion in allowing Phillips to testify in a limited matter on the opinions expressed in his expert report. As the trial court found, the township did not dispute that Phillips was qualified to render an expert opinion on planning. Furthermore, while Phillips did not submit an expert report written for the current litigation, defendants did furnish his expert report from the prior 2002 litigation.
We know what they said, okay. But the point is that East Allendale, and as Justice Lubecki reminded me, Caoli,
mm-hmm.
require is you don't present to a jury on a silver platter a evaluation that includes a use that would not be lawful without a variance.
Well,
and in order to do that, you put before the judge, out of the presence of the jury, with your client having the burden, the reasonable probability of the variance that would be required to get to that alleged highest and best use. Those are the requirements. What the appellate division said about an expert and qualifications, and he handed off his expert report, all very nice,
mm-hmm.
complies perhaps with the court rule on experts, but that's not what the cases require.
Well, but the highest and best use is really a determination made by an appraiser, and that was by Mr. Stewart's. And what I would concede, Your Honors...
Does it have to be based on something in this case and the fact that there would be a zoning change and they would allow more densely built lots? And doesn't he need to prove that it's likely, reasonable, that zoning change would happen? And don't you do that through a 104 hearing?
Well, actually, no, because the four-prong test in the highest and best use is what's legally permissible, what's maximally functional.
At the time he gave his testimony, without a zoning change, what he had testified to would not be legally permissible, would it?
No, it's not legally permissible.
Okay, so then doesn't he need to go to 104 here and explain that there would be a likelihood of a zoning change or a probability?
Well, Your Honor, again, Justice, the issue really is that I believe that occurred during Judge Goomer's colloquy.
You believe there was a 104 hearing?
I believe, in essence, first of all...
So you can see that a 104 hearing is necessary?
In certain situations.
And if there was no 104 hearing, what you believe was a 104 hearing, then you lose?
Well, no. If the only thing that East Allendale really deals with is whether or not a Rule 104 hearing is required to determine whether or not a zoning change is likely or whether or not it
is. Forget about the 104 hearing, because Justice Patterson touched on expert testimony. Expert testimony requires the where and the wherefore.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just give a result. You have to give the foundation.
Correct.
The foundational testimony here was, was there a reasonable probability of getting a variance? Before the planner was permitted to testify that the best use of the property was for half-acre zoning. Where did that come out?
That was in his report. It was in the four corners of his report.
Not before the report.
Okay.
Before the jury. The why and the wherefore has to be before the jury. Where was that?
Good question, Justice Rappaport, and I think I can answer that.
That's Justice Albin. But still a good question.
But if you thought it was a good question, you can leave it
there. It is. Justice Albin, I'm sorry. The why and the wherefore essentially is based upon the cross-examination that occurred of Mr. Stewart, by myself, the cross-examination that occurred of Ms. Beam, who was a township planner, and, more importantly, the exhibits that Mr. Phillips testified to. He testified to two whiteboards which had the surrounding zoning and showed the size of those lots. So I think the why and the wherefore was satisfied.
Did that get into the reasonable likelihood, the reasonable probability of a zoning change?
Well, Your Honor, I don't...
You just referred to.
No, I don't think it does, Your Honor. I don't think there's really a concern about the reasonable likelihood of a zoning change in any of Mr. Phillips' testimony. Mr. Phillips testified to a description of the surrounding area, and did opine that based upon the description of the surrounding area, yes, you could yield more lots on this based upon Mr. Stewart's testimony that sewer and water was available, that more lots could be yielded even under his testimony, which I believe he said 14 lots. So Mr. Stewart, in essence, provided the groundwork for Mr. Phillips to testify.
Assume that you had those maps,
mm-hmm.
but there was some other proof elsewhere that the likelihood of a zoning change was nil.
Mm-hmm.
Could the testimony come in nonetheless As long as you elide any comment about the likelihood of a change, you're suggesting that it would be permissible.
Well, we don't know that, Your Honor, Justice, because, you know, first of all, it would have required a density variance, which would require, obviously, satisfying the negative and positive criteria and site suitability. And I will add that when I cross-examined Ms. Beam as to her testimony, she commented on that. She commented to a great extent on that. And Ms. Beam, by the way, was afforded an opportunity to come back as a witness, which I think she did do at the conclusion of the defendant's case.
Can I tell you what's puzzling me and
sure.
ask you a response? This could potentially be extremely helpful to your client. If you came in with proofs that there's a strong likelihood that the zoning change would happen and they could build 6 times the number of houses, why wouldn't you want to champion that from the rooftops for the jury?
Your Honor, in this scenario, I mean, this was a trial that that obviously went to the jury. They weighed the testimony of all the witnesses. They weighed the testimony of the plaintiff's witnesses, who I would concede, and I think the appellate division even commented on it, some of their testimony was, to use their term, incredible. It just was not something that the jury bought into. Sure, I mean, if the matter is remanded back, and I would hope that it would not be, but if it's remanded back for a Rule 104 hearing and a new trial, yes, I guess I would champion that cause. But there was a strategic decision made based after hearing the testimony of Mr. Stewart and Ms. Beam that we didn't need to even bring our
appraisers. Was a strategic decision because expert testimony that leaps over the question of whether or not a variance would be provided is even better than testimony about the likelihood of a variance being provided. Was that your strategy?
No, I think the strategy was, after hearing the testimony of Mr. Stewart and Ms. Beam, that they were essentially helping us prove our case. And I think if the court looks at the cross-examination of them, I think you'd come to that same conclusion. I think that's what the appellate division did. I think the appellate division, and by the way, it's quite obvious and quite clear to me that this appellate panel reviewed all of the transcripts, reviewed everything.
Of course.
Because they commented on it. And
of
they
course.
Issued,
there's
yeah.
no question that
there's no
that,
question.
That the trial court did and the appellate division did and this court
yeah.
did. But that
yeah.
doesn't mean, because the court carefully reviews transcripts, that you can leap over a requirement that's been set forth in a couple of cases by this court and just simply decide it wasn't necessary.
No, I don't think that's what happened here, Justice Patterson. I think what happened here is the appellate division obviously reviewed the transcripts, obviously reviewed the argument of counsel, the briefs, and determined that because Mr. Phillips' testimony was so limited, I mean, they obviously looked at the same testimony you looked at, that it was limited. He did not go into the issue of the likelihood of a variance. He did not go into the likelihood of a zone change. He was specifically barred from doing that. I didn't ask any questions regarding that. And in fact, what Judge Goomer did is she said, listen, you can only testify to these issues, and that's it. And that's what he did.
You must have been thrilled by that ruling, because it allowed your expert to go to town and just skip over the issue of the fact that this was not permitted by the existing zoning.
I think what I was...
You don't have to admit you were happy.
I think what I was thrilled at was the day we went out for a site visit. It was in January, and it was a beautiful day like it was yesterday. All right, and obviously that site visit, I'm sure, stuck into the minds of these jurors, and obviously we drove around the neighborhood.
Obviously you tried a very effective case. The point is, was it a case that complied with the law?
I think it did. I think it did, Justice Patterson. I think and again, I'll just go back to the fact that if Mr. Wolf wanted a Rule 104 hearing, he had his opportunity to do so. There was a pretrial order that was issued probably in April or March of 2016, several months before this trial, where he had a deadline to do that. Then he tries to do it again. He files various motions in limine. By the way, I don't think one of them entailed a Rule 104 hearing. There were various motions in limine that were argued before the trial commenced.
But Rule 104 hearings are asked for all the time in motions in limine.
I agree.
So there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't. But he was required under a pretrial order to do
did
it.
Did your adversary, or did he not, pretrial request the 104 hearing in accordance on this issue?
No, he requested the motion in limine kind of danced around that. It was to change it was to have a certain valuation date be applied to this. It was to bar certain expert testimony. But the request for the real request, Justice Patterson, occurred during on January 11th, I would suggest. That's when it happened.
I have just one more.
Sure.
One more
thank
question.
You.
The jury hears this evidence that we've gone over. How were they to assess whether six times the number of houses could have, in fact, been built?
Well, excellent question. How can they assess that? They can assess that based upon the specific jury charge that was prepared by counsel. I didn't prepare the jury charge. Mr. Wolf prepared the jury charge. If you look copiously at the jury charge, you will see where Judge Goomer put restrictions on what they could and could not consider. And in essence, you had the general charge as well that, listen, you can consider any expert testimony that you'd like. You can discard all expert testimony. That's in the jury charge. That's in the jury charge.
Standard. Yeah, but I'm also looking at Judge Goomer's ruling, and she says he can testify as the highest and best use, mm-hmm. meaning this density right. that's not covered by the current variance. He can talk about the line in his report about suitability for development, all in accordance with a status of law that doesn't exist. I don't know how you overcome that. And how does that not be directly contrary to Cannoli and what Allendale said?
Justice, I think it can be, because I don't believe that what happened here with regard to the testimony of Mr. Phillips in dealing with highest and best use, which is really not a planner's, that's not a planner's decision. That's really an appraiser's decision. That's an appraiser, an appraising tool. But all he did was testify to what the surrounding community was about, which was all half-acre lots in this, and you have this little donut hole here. And I don't think he deviated from that. And I don't think I think Judge Goomer was correct in limiting his testimony, and his testimony was limited. He did not deviate from that. And in terms of dealing with how the jury came to this decision, we'll never know that. That's the one mystery that we always have. Mm-hmm. How does a jury come up with a number? But I don't think it deviates from East Allendale. I think as the appellate division said, and I just want to read it into the record, moreover, contrary to the township's argument, a Rule 104 hearing was not required before allowing Phillips to testify. Unlike the expert in Allendale, Phillips did not present testimony regarding the likelihood of a variance being granted to the subject property. He merely confirmed that while his opinion was that the subject property is best suited for half-acre lots, a variance or other zoning change would be required before such lots would be permitted on the subject property. Thus, Phillips' testimony did not make any speculative comments regarding the likelihood of defendants obtaining a variance. And East Allendale is somewhat specific as to what that Rule 104 hearing is required for. It's required for exactly what the appellate division said.
I do have two questions. One.
Thank you, Justice.
I take it you are not disputing that the jury got to consider that 72 lots could be built on this property, six times the density.
Well, I don't know if it was. No, I don't think it was.
Six times 12.
Well, no, don't forget, you've got to take into account infrastructure improvements and everything else. So no, there's no way 72 lots could be built here. But,
all right.
Six times 12
is 60. So I just said that. So whatever that number is, mm-hmm. did anybody testify to the number of lots that could be built on that property at a half acre each?
No, I don't think that testimony
did anybody testify about what those half-acre-like lots would be worth per lot?
Well, Mr. Stewart testified that on a per-lot basis, I believe it came to 2.25 per lot.
$236,000 for 12
lots. Right.
Did anybody testify that if you could build these half-acre lots, what the value was per lot?
No, there was no testimony as to that, Justice.
Do you have any contention, as we sit here today, as to what the jury's $4.5 million number was premised upon?
I think their $4.5 million number was premised on a total discrediting of the testimony of Mr. Stewart and Ms. Beam.
So we're starting at zero.
Yeah, certainly their site visit. And again, the fact that they're free to determine, I mean, certainly they're free to, in fact, I didn't cite the case in this brief, but I may have cited it in my appellate division brief, that evaluation is not something that requires expert testimony.
Do they have to have some evidence? For example, an owner can say, my house is worth $40,000. Do they require some testimony regarding the per lot value?
No, not on the Wemrock case, which was, I believe, cited in my appellate division brief. No.
No, I'm not saying expert testimony. No evidence regarding the per lot value.
No. Other than the 236.
No.
And the 236, the math doesn't work.
Right. No, other than Mr. Stewart's valuation. That's
I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure how a jury ever comes up with the determination.
I'm not saying you need to. Just asking the question.
Thank you.
Anything you'd like to add to your presentation?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wolf, did you want to offer a rebuttal?
Yes, very. It's the contention of defendants that a 104 hearing de facto occurred within the context of arguments. That's simply untrue. There's no de facto substitution for a 104 hearing. You either have a 104 hearing or you don't. In this case, there was no 104 hearing. Counsel for defendant suggests that Mr. Wolf didn't ask for a 104 hearing. Well, of course not. I didn't ask for a 104 hearing because my client wasn't contending that the use of that property could be anything other than what it is. If defendants wanted to introduce testimony regarding a use other than the legally permissible use of three-acre lots, it was their burden to ask for a 104 hearing. Within the context of that hearing, it was their burden to present testimony to the judge sitting without a jury as to the reasonable probability that either a variance or a zoning change would have been reasonably probable. They didn't do that. None of the steps required by Caoli and East Allendale were followed in this case. And the rationale utilized by the appellate division was simply contrary to everything those other two cases stood for. There was no doubt a variance was necessary. The defendant's attorney admitted that he has a lofty burden if he's going to argue for a change in use. So he doesn't argue for a change in use. He just brings in a planner, a planner testifies, and then the attorney for the defendant sum up.
May I ask you just a terminology question? You said this is a use variance that's required.
Yes.
Mr. Sachs said, no, it's a density variance.
No, it's not a density variance. It's clearly a use variance. A density variance is if property is zoned for a 3-acre lots or 1-acre lots or half-acre lots. And if you do the density calculation, you can only get, say, 10 lots. You could apply for a variance to get one or two more lots. But if you're going to change the zoning from 3 acres to a half an acre, in my opinion, you don't need just a variance. What you need is a zoning change created by an amendment to the zoning ordinance done only by the township committee.
So it's not a variance at all?
It is a variance.
It's a use,
it's a use
so the change. So the change in zoning for the limited property would be called a use variance?
Yes.
Thank you.
So we have the defendant's attorney admitting it's a lofty burden to try to establish a variance. The defender's planner testifies in cross-examination, defendant needs a variance. The township's planner testifies, the defendant needs a variance. The township's appraiser testifies, you need a variance. And the township's planner says, due to physical restraints, it's unlikely it could have been more than 12 lots, which addresses the questions just before by Justice Solomon. The fact of the matter is the defendants didn't want a 104 hearing. They wanted an unguided, uninformed, and actually in this case misinformed jury. That's why they didn't produce their appraiser. They wanted the jury to have unlimited, unbounded opportunities to come back with a verdict. That's why our client moved for a judgment at the end of testimony, because there was no contrary expert opinion on the use of the property or the value of the property. That motion was denied. The defendants made, as Mr. Saxon acknowledges, a strategic decision, because this is what they wanted. Here's the summation of the defense attorney. Mr. Phillips testified essentially is a transition zone between this area and the municipal offices and high school that are over here. This zone, which is immediately adjacent to the north of the site, is the R20 zone, which permits a minimum lot size of 20,000 square feet, which is half an acre. I'm suggesting to you that this donut, paren, the Gentile property, fits into this pattern over here. That summation argument was, the setup for that summation argument was provided by the failure to have a 104 hearing and the testimony, which was inadmissible, of the planner. Based upon that, I will rest and just indicate that the $4.5 million judgment was, in my opinion, unjust. The loss to the township was $1,607,000. That could not have occurred if there had been a 104 hearing, and I respectfully submit I've ended my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement. Court's in recess.